Translation. Exalted persons like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees, by great... Sorry, let me do that again. May the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees by great saints who always observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service, and renunciation, be pleased with us. I'll read that again. Exalted persons like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees, by great saints who always observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service, and renunciation, be pleased with us. Nam Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nomine, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Vicharane, Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi Paschati Deshitarane, Vancha Kalpa Jubista, Kripa Sundabhya Vichar, Patitanam Pavnibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Naman Maha. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki. Purport. I'm getting things mixed up this morning. So I just had a car crash on the way here this morning. I'm just trying to be a bit renounced about it. In a hurry to come and give class and anyway. Purport. The absolute truth is sought by different persons in different ways, yet he remains inconceivable. Nonetheless, devotees like the Pandavas, the Gopis, the Cowherd Boys, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he remains with them through thick and thin. Therefore, a saint like Narada, understanding the difference between transcendentalists and pure devotees, always prays that the Lord will be pleased with him. Sometimes we're very lucky to have sort of been given Krishna consciousness in one sort of fell swoop. The process of transcendence is quite a long process. Some of us didn't know much about transcendence in any way. And then we've been given the Supreme Personality of Godhead straight away. Sometimes we find people who already we know that expression we get when we're preaching, I am already knowing this. So when you already know something, it can be quite complicated. Or when you think you know something, eh? Isn't it one of the expressions is the biggest problem with communication is we think that it's happened. Ever heard that expression? The biggest problem with communication is we think that it's happened. And so the biggest problem is with knowledge is we think we know it. So in one sense, coming from difficult backgrounds, maybe quite a foolish background, we're very lucky that we've not sort of been all mixed up with all, especially this demigod worship, these different types of meditation, these different yoga practices, things like that. Makes it very simple. I don't know if it's mentioned as one of the values. Sometimes we talk about the different qualities of devotees, and it's something in my teaching we come across all the time, different values that we have. But gratitude is, I don't know, something I meditate on. When I get up in the morning and I'm feeling rough and I just look at what I've got, materially and spiritually. I used to think gratitude was something for the other person, but gratitude is for the person that's feeling it. Gratitude isn't for the person we're giving it to or we're grateful to, it's for us. I suppose I grow up with people saying, you should be grateful, right? Actually, we could simply strip away everything we know. Actually, as a meditation, what have we learnt in this world? Everything's been given by our parents or different teachers or different newspapers. Dare we mention journalists at the moment? But so many things. But actually, if we strip that away, what do we actually know? You can actually look at the world, meditate on it, and think, how is this going on? Problem is, when we've got knowledge, we don't think like that anymore. We lose our wonder. We lose our connection. We think we know everything. Actually, we do see with knowledge. Whatever we've been told, that has an effect how we see. And it appears that the way we're taught, especially nowadays, it takes away that wonder. Well, we could actually be looking at every moment thinking, how is that happening? How am I sitting here now? How am I breathing? How's my body working? And then we've got different alternatives. We can listen to different philosophers, different people giving their opinions. We're like little children. Who do we go to? We don't have much intelligence, but what intelligence we've got needs to be used in finding out who we go to. A very popular when I first came to the movement for everyone to think they could make it. It was noble not to go to a teacher. Of course, it was that famous. It was noble to do it yourself. It was noble to remain uncommitted. I had a student the other day that... Joe here is from Baspar University, and you might meet Joe when he's here for a bit. But a few students come every year for different weeks. And she was making that point quite rightly. I mean, I'm not invalidating what she said. She said, yes, I'm studying different. I sort of asked, have you got your religion? Or somehow that came up. And at one point she said, yeah, I'm just studying different cultures, different religions, which is good, very good. But at some point, we can't go on like that forever. I don't know how many of us went to university and how many were thinking, I don't know which one to go for, right? But it's no use saying, well, I'm going to go to a bit of this uni and a bit of that university. Same when we get married, we can't say, I'm going to go a bit of that girl and a bit of that girl, right? We could be in trouble. At some point, life demands decisions. When we make decisions too fast, like today I made a decision to pull out too fast probably, and I had an accident. When we make decisions too fast, we can have an accident. But at the same time, if we, what was it Will Rogers said? If you sit on the middle for too long, what's the expression he said? Oh, I can't remember it now. Actually, I think it was Maggie Thatcher also said something like that. Something like, if you're always in the middle of the road, you'll get hit by the traffic both ways. So sometimes in life, you can't sort of sit on the fence for too long, as it were. Right? Life demands. Right? I think sometimes they say there was some story from Greek mythology where someone had to choose between two goddesses, right? So at one point you're going to have to choose one goddess against the other, right? Again, you can't keep two girls hanging on for too long, right? Maybe Krishna can. He can do that. But we can't. You can't do that. And you're going to have to. We're going to have to make a decision. And when you choose one goddess, the other goddess is going to might have some. She might be a little upset. So when we make a decision, we're going to lose something. So we're forced sometimes. What was my point? I'm losing my point. What was I saying just before? Yeah, so we cannot... Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. So we need... You know, it's when it comes to religion, we can study anything in life. We can study, we can deliberate, and then we have to make a decision. And then we deliberate on the next step and make a decision. And we certainly don't want to make decisions without deliberating, neither do we want to hold back for too long. So we need to ask someone, who are we going to ask? Who are we going to believe? That's the big question. Is it just happening by chance? It's quite an amazing sort of thing to say, actually. Just to look around and think this is happening by chance. Just think about it, you know. Because we don't want to get into the total thing now. Here we're talking about something very exalted. For most of us, we're not even at that level. I think I told a story years ago. I was having a discussion with one Indian gentleman, and he was saying, he was arguing against this. Krishna's not God. Krishna's not God. So I got into a whole big argument with him. And then I quoted Shastra, and I gave certain... First I tried giving logic. But of course, Srila Prabhupada, when he preached, he would use Shastra more in India. Because people will believe it. Just like if you're a lawyer and I quote from the law books, you'll probably have a bit of weight with you. But if you're not a lawyer, it won't mean much to you. So I was eventually started quoting Bhagavad Gita, Matak Para Taranyanad Kinti Dasti Nanjaya, you know, there's no truth superior to me, etc., etc. And then eventually, when he sort of felt completely defeated, he said, I don't believe in God anyway. Right? So you want to argue whether Krishna is God, but then you're telling me you don't believe in God. Let's cut it down to the beginning, and I wasted my time, right? So when we're preaching or talking to someone or just in conversation, sometimes we have to find out where we are, right? You can only start from where a person's at. Otherwise, you can waste your time. So for most of us, many people don't even believe in God. We have to start with that. And yet we've been, this verse, and we've been brought to that position, is understanding who God is in his entirety. We've been given a lot at once. I think we need to see the whole picture, the beginning and the end. We say this in education, if you're teaching children. For instance, if children are coming here, I think we've got 100 coming today, and they'll probably be learning something like places of worship. So how does the teacher start on a subject like that? Do you just go in and say, oh, there's different religions? No, different places they go to. You say, no, do you have a special place? Jimmy, do you have a little place? Do you have a little secret den somewhere? Somewhere where you feel safe? Children do, don't they, have little places? Sometimes they go do little rituals as well, right? Kids sometimes get little stones and flowers and pick them up. It's a bit like when I go to India, I'm going tomorrow morning. See people just going along and get a little bag and bring all their puja stuff out, all their little paraphernalia, right? So when you're kids, you do the similar thing, right? You have your little stones and little things you collect and put them in your pockets, right? So we have to start with where people are at. Most of us don't even believe in God. And before we talk about God, we have to talk about the soul. No question. Once we understand that drop of water, then we can understand the ocean. That's how we analyze. Try and analyze, go and analyze what the ocean is made up of. All right, Ben, can you go and get the ocean and analyze it? You'll have to sort of put it in quite a few test tubes, right? The whole ocean. But we'll just get the little test tube and test it. That's all. And then we can find out about the whole ocean. Similarly, very important. Very important why we're reflective. We can understand a lot about God by looking at ourselves. And we have to start at that point. That actually I'm sitting in this body and somehow everything's going on. Quite simple, isn't it? Quite simple. I've had a baby's body. I've had a young man's body. I've had a middle-aged body, and I've got an old body. Very simple. Very, very simple. Trouble is, Maya's powerful. The illusion's so powerful that we can forget that at any point. That's a meditation in itself. I think I've told you we do that one with the kids sometimes. We give them a biscuit each. Sometimes you have to imagine because you're not allowed to give biscuits with health and safety. You give them a biscuit each and do an experiment. You bite that biscuit and you do a scientific experiment. You know, biscuit, me. We could have a diagram like of him. Biscuit, me. Okay? So then you bite the biscuit. We all like doing this experiment. So when does the biscuit become me? Is it when I bite the biscuit? Then, you know, biscuit, that bit of biscuit, it's all me. Right? Is it when the biscuit goes down into the guts? You know, me, biscuit. Right? Is it when all the nutrients, you know, is it when the body, you know, it's all dissolved by the bile, you know, biscuit? Or is it when it goes into the blood, you know, biscuit, me? You know, we're having a bit of a problem with boundaries there, right? You know, where's one thing begin and one end? And by sort of taking it back, one can actually meditate. No. There's me, separate from the biscuit and all the Weetabix, sorry, if you eat Weetabix, and all the kitchery and everything else that's gone into making up my body. It's all separate. And the air that goes in. It's all separate. That's a sense of transcendence. That's a sense of stepping back. And that's what meditation is about. Dhyā, is it mentioned here? Dhyā. Meditation. Dhyā. Dhyāna. We get the word Zen from that, don't we? And they said the word Zen comes from that. Dhyā. I think it went to, is it Chen or Chan in Chinese and Zen? So that's the beginning. At the same time, we don't want to deny the big. We're the small Krishnas. We're the small, Krishna's the big. I do that with children. I say to them, we're all special. But we're only a little special. Because as soon as we start thinking we're bigger than we are, we get into trouble, don't we? They all know it. They get a few nods, right? And I tell them, I like Krishna. You know why? Because he's naughty. And you know what? The kids really like Krishna when they find out he's naughty. Naturally attracted. Naturally attractive. Krishna's all attractive. I said to someone the other day, I said, I'm speaking about... I said, when I speak to the kids, they love it that Krishna's naughty. And he immediately replied and said, oh, they're all envious of Krishna. Now, we might be envious of Krishna, but that's not our business to see that. We might see it, but whatever we see, we'll get, right? What we do is we see that person sitting in that body is a forgotten devotee of Krishna and has a relationship with Krishna, and Krishna is very sweet, very attractive. And then we give them the taste. Srila Prabhupada says we have to give people that taste. We've forgotten that taste. That's the problem. Krishna is very sweet. Devotional service is very simple. But unfortunately, somehow or other, we lose that taste. And it's possible, you can see in this world, someone can lose a taste. Someone can be rich, married, happy, enjoying themselves, and they can just turn their back on it and go right down. I remember seeing that when I was in 1980, I was in Soho Street, we have a temple in London. And as I'm doing my japa, sort of trying not to look outside too much, especially in London. It's amazing what goes on at 4 o'clock in the morning in London. And I remember seeing a fellow standing in the doorway one morning, regular looking fellow. Saw him the next day. And what happens? He gradually went down, 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 getting scruffier, dirtier, and he was learning to live on the streets. And sometimes I've met people like that when we were doing book distribution, people that just literally turned their back on everything. And you can see they're in a worse position. You can see the suffering. They can't always see it. We do the same thing. We can be quite happy. It's like I've had a car accident, I've got to call the police. Guy went past me and I thought I hadn't hit him, but then when I got there, I see the car had got a mark on it, so I'll get done for hit and run if I don't call the police. So I could be upset about it. I can just deal with it and be happy. I've got a choice. I've got that choice. Very simple, actually. We don't have to let things pull us down. But we can be pulled down. We think that, you know, I could worry about it. I could beat myself up about it. I could lose the taste for being happy. But why? Why? But we do it all the time. People say, how come if we were enjoying with Krishna we came to this material world? How come? Well, we see it happening in this world, and that's always a good thing to look at. As above, so below. And we're trying to understand something transcendental. There's patterns in life. It's reflected in this world all the time. That's why Srila Prabhupada gives so many analogies. Analogies aren't just like parables. There's actually truth within them. The truth is held within every level of existence. There's different layers of truth. So we see it in this world. Someone can walk out of a perfectly happy life and choose to be unhappy. We do it ourselves. You ever catch yourself being unhappy to be happy? Right? Ever catch yourself being miserable to try and get some sympathy? Is it worth it? Why not just be happy? So Srila Prabhupada says, it's our duty to create that taste. To create that taste again. And people will ask, they always say, George Harrison asked, others asked, why just Krishna? Why just Krishna? Actually, this Mayavadi concept is an easy solution. It's too easy. When you've got a problem, you ever try and solve it in a too easy way? People do that sometimes. You ever notice when someone's having difficulty, they say, just get up for Mangalati every day, Prabhu. Or just do this, or just do that. Or just do that. Or just go to India. Right? You got problems? I did that last time. Just go to India. It didn't really solve my problems. You know what India's like. Right? When you hear the word just, what do they say? It's usually a child speaking, right? Child makes everything absolute, right? We do the same thing. You ever heard a devotee come in and say, I've had it with devotional service? Right? I usually say, who was it? I've had it with devotees. Who was it? Let's get specific. You're making absolute. Right? So in the same way, this idea, as they say in all the books on Hinduism practically, that all the different deities are different aspects of the one Brahman. This is very simple. Like in a family, we're all equal. Let's have a family meeting. Okay, we're all equal. Solve that one, isn't it? But I'm sorry, who's going to do what? Who's going to be the boss? Maybe dad's the boss in the garage, mum might be the boss in the kitchen, the kid can sometimes be the boss about cleaning up their own room. What's the different relationships? That makes it more difficult. Actually, when I go to India, I was going to go to, what's it called? There's a place called Tiruvannamalai, I think it's called, where Raman Maharshi was. And I was thinking of going there because I know some fellows in, he's a pujari in the temple in Highgate. And he invited me to go when I'm going. But I looked on the internet and immediately I saw one advertisement for some ashram and something about some swami. He will show you the God. Come to me and he'll show you the God. And I thought, do I want to get into that? Do I want to get into all that Mayavadi stuff? Not really. Prabhupada said hodgepodge. Hodgepodge. We have to be clear. So I'm going to go to Kanchipuram, if Krishna lets me, Tirupati, Sri Rangam, all the Vaishnav places. One of our acharyas is Ramanujacharya. He had a cousin, Govinda. And Govinda became a great worshipper of Shiva, Lord Shiva, at one point. He was with the Vaishnavas, but he was in, where was he? Kalahasti, I think it was. Great Shiva place, as far as I know. And at one point, can't remember who it was, but one of Ramanujacharya's disciples went there. And I think Govinda was up a tree picking flowers for Lord Shiva. And the disciples started reading the Vaishnava scriptures. And as he heard those scriptures, gradually his heart changed. And eventually he went and paid obeisances and said, I'm now worshipping Vishnu, the Lord of my heart. So the process also is very simple. It's about listening. That's all. Very simple. Listen, 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 listen. We get knowledge. Not difficult. Shishi Radhigo Kulananda Ki. And that cleansing and that is the cleansing process, just to put ourselves in that association of devotees and here. That's all. Here with rapt attention. Concentrate. Concentration is really going out the window, isn't it? We were talking about that yesterday, right? You see some people, they're eating, they're on the mobile phone, they're doing this, they're doing that. People don't even sit and eat properly anymore. People just don't have any focus. So, you know, meditation isn't just, you know, we're not just teaching people transcendental things. They're just practical things, even in your everyday life. Do you meditate on the simple things of life, let alone God? And it will be a meditation on God. Sit down, eat, meditate on the food. It's been given by God. It's got a connection with God. Everything's got a connection with God. Therefore, if we're actually teaching people, trying to help people to understand God and Krishna, we need to bring it right down to a very, very basic level. Very basic level. Otherwise, it comes down to a basic level. I wasn't concentrating this morning when I was driving. God's here in our everyday life. Krishna's here. How can we possibly understand God with our minds? This is the whole Mayavadi thing. Lofty, puffed up vanities, Srila Prabhupada says. Lofty, puffed up vanities. So many people saying, yes, aham Brahman, I am God, om namo narayan. Imagine if, you know, I don't know what Joe would have thought if he came here and everyone was going up to him in the morning, everyone was going, hello God, hello God, hello God, how you doing God? I think he'd packed his bags and gone back to Bath. But that's what the Mayavadis are doing. Om namo narayan, when they meet each other, om namo narayan, you're God. You're God. And then they're thinking we can study scriptures, we can work it out. But how powerful is our brain? You know, our brain's not that powerful. Actually, I was just thinking about it. I never really understood it, but it's sort of the penny sort of started dropping, or the rupee started dropping. You know, Srila Prabhupada says in one place, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that interpretation is only when you do not understand something. It's very clear, it's very simple. If I say something to you and it's clear, or you read something and it's clear, it's okay. But if you can't understand something, you say, oh, what does that mean? Then you have to study. You know, something I say to you, can you go and get me a drink? Okay. Then you might have to sort of work it out. What does he want? Does he want rum, vodka, water, milk? What, right? You know, or I say something that's unclear. Can you go to the room and get something? Well, which room is it? We might have to discuss, analyze, right? But if I make it very clear, can I have a glass of water? Please bring me now a glass of water, right? Pure water, right? And then you say, oh, what does Indriyesh want? Maybe he wants rum, right? Or maybe, you know, maybe he's saying that to test me, right? You know, I mean, it's quite clear. If something's clear, believe it. The only time we question is when we can't believe it. But if someone starts questioning everything, isn't that an insult? Just as in normal human relationships, you're speaking to someone. And have you ever got someone like that? They're really on a psychology trip, or maybe they've been dropping too much acid or something, they're crazy. And everything you say, they sort of try and, well, what you really mean is this, right? It would drive you, you know, would drive you mad, right? Right? It's actually an insult. It's an insult. I'm saying this, right? And let's learn from ourselves. Not only that, but I am not going to reveal myself with someone who doesn't communicate clearly. When I meet people that don't have clear communication, and you can tell pretty quick, you know, if people start getting gamey, they're not, you know, they're sort of saying things and you can't, you know, and they're not being straight, right? I don't trust people like that. Anyone I meet, I judge them. And when I meet someone and I can find, you know, I'm sure they're honest, and I'm sure they're not going to hurt me, and I can feel safe with that person, then I'm going to open up. So God's the same. Because he's not scared, he doesn't have to be scared like us. But in, right? He, in one sense, he can't be damaged. Actually, he can be damaged. Krishna hurts. Krishna hurts to see all the souls that have left him. Right? The misconception, you know, Krishna is transcendental. He's above pain and pleasures, but he actually hurts. Srila Prabhupada says in one place, when people say nasty words to him, it hurts him. Just like if your father and the son says something, it hurts. Something nasty, it hurts. Because he doesn't get affected like we get affected. We get hurt and we go right down, right? He actually hurts. He's actually got feelings. So Krishna will not reveal himself to someone who has that spirit of rebellion. And that spirit of rebellion is in those that are going to the demigods, saying Shiva's supreme, saying Brahma is supreme. Because I don't think many say Brahma supreme, but Shiva especially, right? Or the different demigods. Imagine if you're in a business, right, and you're the boss of the business, and everyone's going to someone else saying, well, you're the boss, can you help me out? Huh? No. And of course people will say, oh, this is unfair. Why should you have people above each other? You know, this is dangerous. Wouldn't you have a hierarchy? Right? I think the word hierarchy, actually, by the way, the word hierarchy, we sort of take that word and then we sort of apply it to spiritual things, but actually the world hierarchy is spiritual. The world hierarchy, you didn't use it for corporate management, so in the corporation there's hierarchy. I'm not quite sure the etymology is. Archy means a system of rule, and higher means spiritual. It originally means spiritual. That's the very essence of the word, right? You understand what I'm saying? We use the word hierarchy and say, you know, it's almost like we're taking something that was originally spiritual and then we're saying it's material and we're trying to apply it back to spirit. But it actually originally was spiritual. Everything's based, you know, that shows that we're correct. In the spiritual world, there is higher and lower. There can be no love without higher and lower. And that's the problem. The problem is, we experience in this material world, there's no love. If I'm higher than you, I exploit you. If I'm lower than you, I throw petrol bombs at you nowadays, right? So it's going on. The riots, it's the same thing. You know, those that have, those that don't have, let's not get too involved, right? I actually read an article in the other day on the BBC website that in Africa, every time there's been a revolution, the person that's taken over has been worse. You know, when they got rid of one dictator, it happened in Egypt as well, with the military, things were getting worse. So we don't take sides like that. So therefore, the tendency is, I've been hurt by relationships. I don't want... It's difficult. It's difficult being told what to do. It's also difficult being a boss, anyone running a department. It's difficult. Whatever position you take is difficult. So therefore, we try and make everything equal. But that won't work. In one sense, we are equal as souls, but we have different roles. Very simple. I give a simple example to the children. It's very simple. I say to them, okay, you've got a role, you've got a Porsche, and someone's got a van. Now, if someone starts saying, oh, I've got a Porsche, I'm better than you because you've got a Transit, right? That's not correct. We both get out our car, a van, we're the same. Right? At the same time, very simple example, very same time, if one of you wants to move house or something, Vishwambo wants to move house, I'm going to use the van. I'm not going to use the Porsche, right? Someone needs to go to hospital, I'm going to use the Porsche, not the van, because he needs to get there quick. Very simple. Very, very simple. The bodily differences must be taken into account. But spiritually, we're equal. Similarly, there's differences in the spiritual world. And Krishna, matak parataram, Krishna is the boss. Of course, Krishna will give the illusions. These philosophies have always been there. Philosophies are like Krishna. Krishna's always there, he comes and goes. Philosophies are also eternally here in this material world. The whole material world is a rationalization of why it's a reason. Krishna makes that Maya. We have that problem sometimes with philosophy. You know, how come God made Satan? We say, no, Krishna made Maya. We all need excuses, right? There's no one in this world that does something wrong, you know. Hasn't got an excuse, right? I was thinking this morning, I had this accident, I could just blame the other guy, right? Very easy to blame the other guy, but I have to look what I did wrong, right? That's harder. So these excuses are always there. And actually, with Shiva, there was one person once said to me, there's a fight, you know the fight between Shiva and Krishna? At one point when they're fighting, was it over Banasura or Balmasur? I can't remember. At one point, how's it go? Krishna sent a yawning weapon? No, Shiva sent a yawning weapon. That's right. Shiva sent a yawning weapon, right? Is that right? Let me think about this. No. Vishnu sent a yawning weapon. Shiva went, oh. So then Krishna won the fight. But then I met someone who was a Shiva worshipper, and the reason Shiva worshipped was he was fighting with Krishna. He went, oh. Easy peasy, this is no problem. That's how they interpret it, right? Shiva was yawning because Krishna had sent a weapon that eventually defeated him. It was this weapon that made him yawn and get sleepy, right? And he defeated him in the end, right? But the Shivites, they say, no, Shiva was just fighting, easy, no problem, right? You see? So in one sense, we have no, and this is an important point, we have no problem with demigods. We have no problem. No problem with demigod worship. I'm going to be going to India. I'll be praying to the demigods, but not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the problem. We have no problem saying everyone's God, but we're all small part and parcel of God. We have no actual conflict, ultimately, with the Mayavadi philosophy. Everything is one. Everything is Brahman. Right? The Supreme is formless. And he's got a form as well. We add to it. We say the absolute truth is not complete. It's an incomplete understanding. So most people aren't either in ignorance or knowledge. There's all different degrees. That's the point. There's all different degrees. And when we're speaking to someone, we always have to say, everyone's got some knowledge. And if we don't see that, we'll be foolish, religious, I won't say nutters, I'm not allowed to, right? Sit on, right? But we say everyone's got some knowledge. Our job is just to add to that knowledge, take them a step further. And when we have Krishna at the top, we have everything. We have Shiva in his place, Brahma in his place, Indra in his place, you in your place, the animals in the place, the rivers in the place, the fruits, everything in this world is in its correct position when we put Krishna at the top. But if we don't, then it's an insult not just to Krishna, but to everyone else. Because if I say to one of you here, I start praising you above your station, that is an insult. If a doctor says, oh, you're healthy, but you're not, he's not doing you any good, right? So it's an insult to put people in a higher position than they are. It's only nice to someone if you treat them as they are, with the people above them, the people below them, get everything in its place. Then you're actually dealing with that person, that's the truth. And therefore the truth, according to this and according to Narada Muni, who is way, way, way beyond what, I mean, how can we imagine how great a teacher he is? Then according to him, very simply, that even Brahma, Shiva can't explain about Krishna. Just look at the difference, and yet we're asked to go and talk about Krishna. We're asked to talk about Krishna. And the only way we can do that is through getting that help. Someone the other day said to me, I can't even remember who it was, but I'm not going to say any names. Someone said to me, I'm doing preaching like you. I'm doing indirect preaching like you. I was furious. I said, no. I'm telling the kids they're not the body. I'm telling Krishna they're God. Now, we might be dressing up as Indian warriors. We might be dressing the girls as princesses, right? We might not be giving a Bhagavatam class like this. We might be giving them values like delaying gratification. Aren't we into that? Prabhupada says it's a human can delay gratification. Animals aren't. We're telling them how to be human. Is that not spiritual? It is direct. The whole parampara is direct. The guru is like the glasses. Without them, I can't see. Transparent. But those glasses focus it. So our job is to focus Krishna consciousness according to the person. Everyone's got different prescriptions, right? Our job is to bring everything into focus. And here it's, my vadi is blurred focus. Oh, you all look the same to me. No, we must get into focus and get perspective. And what's perspective? Intelligence. Intelligence means seeing things in perspective. This is here, this is here, this is here, like a good picture. Some are at the back, some are closer, right? Of course, our big problem is we build our own pictures and we put ourselves in the forefront, right? We've got the perspective wrong, right? And God's over the horizon, right? So we have to get the picture in perspective. All right, I'm going to stop there because I've got a lot to do. I'm going to India tomorrow morning. Any time, a quick question?